Hello, welcome to Bart Cop Radio. It's show number 164. Well, it seems like it's only been 6 or 8 months since we did a radio show, but we are back. And not only are we are back with a full explanation of what went wrong. But maybe we have the wheels back on the train. Is that a phrase? I don't know. But welcome, welcome, Bart Cop Radio 164. We also have some newness. Got me a radio partner now. Going to see how that turns out. What we did is kind of a practice show. But it turned out okay. I thought I'd go ahead and post it, let you know that we were once again back in the radio business. It's so much easier to have a conversation with someone than it is to sit down and look at a microphone and be brilliant and funny for an hour. Recording this on a Wednesday in super frozen Oklahoma. I got a thermometer out the back door. It says zero. They said it was 6 degrees last night, so I don't know how it could be zero at noon the next day, but whatever the thermometer says, it's real damn cold. It's so cold, Mrs. Bart's water feature had to be shut off. That's how cold it was, her little bubbler in the backyard. The show also kind of comes in two parts. Corey, my new radio partner, and I, we recorded a show maybe, I don't know, Thursday, Friday last week. And then, of course, you know what happened on Saturday. So the first two-thirds of the show is going to be about pre-shoot, and then the last little bit on the show is going to be, what do you call it, after shoot or whatever that, there's a Latin phrase there that escapes me at the moment. But hopefully you like parts of it. And remember now, this is not what the new Bart Cop Radio is going to sound like. This is our first practice show. We even had some difficulties with Corey's in Minnesota or Alaska somewhere, and I'm here in frozen Oklahoma. And so we had some mic issues that we had to match up. You know, it took us months just to get to where me and him could talk to each other. So now that we've talked to each other and we come up with a decent show, and so we're going to let you know that we are going to do regular shows. I know you heard that before, but now I got a partner. Someone called me and said, hey, Bart, ready to do a show? And I'm going to say, yeah. So got more radio coming. Guess we should just get right into it. Bart Cop Radio, we're back.
Bart Cop Radio, a microphone, a smart mouth, and the truth.
So here we are. It's my first time on Bart Cop Radio. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Corey, calling from the socialist state of Minnesota. And we're trying out a new thing here on Bart Cop Radio. Bart's got a co-host.
We have been trying for months to make this work. You wouldn't believe. I mean, I could go through the whole thing, but you wouldn't want to hear it. But just in real, real short, when somehow I added a program to my radio computer, and it made my speakers, it took the drivers out or something, and the speakers changed or whatever, and I had to have my super high-powered and expensive tech come over. He finally found it. But then, you know, Christmas came and blah, 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 but we finally got it hooked up. It's kind of hard to believe. We are in the radio business. And since we don't know what we're doing, this show may be so bad, it may just be partially bad, where we might label it a test show and then promise to do a better show next time. But I thought if it's cool with you, maybe we'll just dive in a couple of subjects and see what happens.
Okay, that sounds great. First thing that I think we ought to discuss, you haven't done a show since August.
And the August show was the first one I'd done. Can I confess something? I think I ought to go ahead and be honest here. Can I confess something to you?
Well, yes, you can.
The reason for the radio crash, I was on the phone, you know, my buddy with all the money, he keeps wanting to do Bart Cop TV. He's got many, many dollars, and he's building a studio at the whole riff. But anyway, he keeps talking about Bart Cop TV. He's serious. He wants to do it. He's got the money. So I've talked to Tommy and Tally. Tommy's the guy who knows everything. I mean, he's a genius in 8, 10, 15 different directions. So we started talking about this Bart Cop TV, and he said, Bart, can I tell you something? And I said, sure. He said, your radio show is so bad and unfunny. I stopped listening to it years ago. And to be honest with you, that just shattered my confidence. Just completely and totally. I mean, I'm not Rush Limbaugh. I'm not one of these people who thinks I'm the greatest thing that ever flown and my voice is just gold. And now it's hard for me to do radio anyway, just because it's hard to sit down alone and come up with an entertaining hour, you know. To me, that's like, oh, Christ, let's build a house. So when Tommy Mac told me I hadn't been funny in years, I thought, oh, what? You know, I almost threw the microphone away. Plus, you know, you turn on Mike Malloy or Randy Rhodes. I mean, these professionals, they just boom, boom, boom. They run right through it. And after Tommy told me that, I thought I should get out of the radio business. But, you know, I got to have an income of some kind, and there's not a real good reason to subscribe unless you're getting something extra for your buck. So that's the reason why I've done one radio show in the last 8 or 10 months is because I look at the microphone, I think, I'm not funny. Nobody wants to hear what I say. But maybe between us, we can build something, because it's so much easier to have a conversation than it is to sit on like a vulgar pig boy and just bark into the microphone and expect people to worship at my feet. Okay, we got that out of the way. But yes, it's been months and months. Hell, that was last year. But I'd like to do a show a week. Hell, I'd like to just depend on what your schedule is. I like to, you know, just make Tuesdays or Saturday morning or whatever. Let's just pick a time and we'll just do a show a week, and we'll have 52 shows by this time next year. I think that'd be great.
Well, here's what's going on with me. I'm new to the Bart Cop universe, although I've submitted some things. I used to do the graphic novel reviews on Bart Cop Entertainment. Bart's printed a few of my cartoons and some of my letters and stuff. He calls me a pillar, which I always find hilarious because I barely support myself, let alone Bart Cop. But I've been out of work for about 2 years.
But what year did we meet? Was it like 2005 or earlier?
I started emailing you in 2004, and we met in 2005.
In Chicago, right?
Yep. And at that time, I was the director of a group home for kids in the juvenile justice system. And I was working...
Is that young boys or young girls?
Well, it was young boys, and then my last 6 months or so, it was co-ed. That's one of the reasons I quit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've got a story there, but we'll get into
it. Oh, we've got tons of time for tons of stories.
That's one thing we have is time.
But
it'd be great if we did like a 6-hour show, and that'd be our first 6 shows, you know?
Well, I also do another podcast where we sat down, and I remember first one, my friend Joe, who is in the TSA, and he travels around, and we talk comic books.
He said, he's one of those genital grabbers?
He calls himself a junk dealer. And
a junk grabber.
The first day they're doing that, at the end of the day, he's in the break room, and he goes, boy, I feel like Fred Sanford. I've just been a junk dealer today. And most of the people in the break room looked at him as if they had no idea what he was talking about. And he said, that's when I realized that I was too old for the room.
You know, I feel bad for those TSA guys. It's not like they've been asking, please, please, can we grab people, please? You know, the poor bastard goes to work one day and they say, hey, we got new orders, so now we're going to grope people. And it's like, well, really? I understand it's not great for them, but I don't know. I'm one of the crazies that I'd rather get groped. I've been through the line since that began. And in Tulsa, I don't know, it's just weird. In Tulsa, they just say, walk through the thing.
Yeah.
And that was it. Well, hey, what are the topics we got? Because we have a cornucopia of topics. Since I hadn't done a radio show in half a year, we got everything to talk about.
Well, I was driving back from work. I'm the busiest unemployed person in the world. Now, I'm starting a new job in about 3 weeks. But
what kind of job is that?
I am back in HR, finally.
Human resources?
Yes.
What's that mean? You do payroll and?
Payroll and benefits.
Well, there you go.
And I'm supervising people again, so I've climbed back up the ladder after Bush knocked me off it. But as I'm driving home about this kabuki theater that the Republicans did on their first day, where they took turns reading the Constitution as if they're in seventh grade and they have to read a short story in class.
Really?
And I don't understand what they thought they were doing with that. Because first off, they didn't read the entire Constitution. They left out all the stuff about slaves being allowed and women not being able to vote. And you can only vote if you're a landowner. And the stuff in the Constitution that we all kind of want to ignore ever happened, because we don't want to ever think that our founding fathers might have done something horrible at some point. But it sounds like a sales pitch. You worked in the car business. You know, you go into the car dealer and he goes, oh, you won't believe this car. It's got all this beautiful stuff. It does this, and we're going to do this for you, and we're going to do that for you. And then after you drive the car off, they treat you like everybody else, where, oh, we didn't say we were giving you new tires. Is it written down? Gosh, it's not written down. I don't get it. So it sounds like they're putting out that they're, oh, we are starting this session by doing what the founding fathers wanted. And the first thing they're going to do is try and repeal health care. Now, these are the same people who, when they say, you know, we don't want gays in the military, we don't want this, we don't want that, they hold up the Bible and go, well, God doesn't want us to do it. So I think what they're setting in place is anybody who goes against him, it's, well, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams wouldn't have said that, or they would have put it in the Constitution. Really? So they wrap themselves up in the Constitution, but they don't understand it, and they're not going to use it.
Did they ever say why they were reading the Constitution?
No. No, they just said that's what they do.
It seems like the whole country's crumbling, and nobody has a job, and the infrastructure's crumbling, and terrorists are, you know, and the first thing they do when they get in power is they read aloud. That just makes no sense. I put on the page the other day, that didn't create any jobs. But why do anything that doesn't create jobs? That's a lesson Obama, I think, needs to learn. His name ought to be Barack Jobs Obama. He ought to be Jobs, Jobs, Jobs. Jesus Christ, would you shut up about the jobs? We're sick of hearing you talk about the jobs. But jobs is something that comes up occasionally with Obama. And that I think, single issue is what killed us in November.
There were a lot of things that killed us in November. A lot of stuff.
I agree.
First off, the Democrats blew it. Flat out blew it. The tax cuts for the middle class, when did they get that done, Bart?
Lame duck.
Yeah, that was after everybody had voted.
The roots of trouble.
Bart Cop Radio. It's like BartCop.com, but with more passion.
How about Don't Ask, Don't Tell? When did they do that?
After.
Oh, gosh. And all the other stuff that, you know, they say, oh, this was the greatest lame duck session ever. We got a lot done. They did it all after everybody had voted.
Which proves they could have done it at any time. They just didn't want to.
You know what? If I were running for office and I was in office and the other side had gotten a ton of publicity, they had their own TV network, they have all AM radio, I would have passed those tax cuts 2 months before the election, and then in every ad I ran, in the last 2 years, I have cut taxes on the middle class twice, once in the stimulus bill, and then once about a month ago, and then I would show footage of me voting to cut taxes twice.
Yeah.
Now, yes, there are all sorts of other issues, and maybe cutting taxes isn't a good idea because of the deficit. I don't care. You know what voters want? They want to know their taxes are going to be low, and they're going to get a ton of goodies.
But have you heard the thing that Obama signed this tax cut for the middle class, and the teabaggers, that was their big deal, get off our back, and we want more of our money? And I think the number was somewhere around 13 or 15% of the people, of the teabaggers, realized that they got a tax cut. They got a tax cut that they didn't know about. So their number one bitch had already been addressed and handled. And they get together, you know, 100,000 strong to rally for something that they already had. You know, trying to make a moron happy can be a really tough job.
Well, this leads into my big problem with Obama. Now, you've talked about your issues with Obama, and I think Tally took you out behind the woodshed and smacked you around a little bit in one of her emails.
Well, she tried.
She's tried, but, you know, it's not a good idea to argue with Tally because she's smarter than both of us put together. But there's a website called What the F Has Obama Done So Far, except they don't say F, they use the word. And it, you know, you click on it and it tells you another thing he's done.
It's like 120 things, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's the most productive session since the Great Society by LBJ.
Yeah.
And yet, all you hear on TV and radio is, well, you know, they didn't get much done other than the stimulus. But it's a do-nothing Congress. It's how come they don't hire a publicist?
I started to say, that's Obama's fault. It's not, you know, if I say, if I do 100 great things and nobody knows about it, that's probably my fault.
How is it I know everything the Kardashians do? And I don't watch their show. I don't know who they are. I have no idea why they're famous. But by God, I know everything they're up to. because they pay someone to say, oh, here's a press release, and we're going to get them on this talk show, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this. And we're going to. Back when Clinton was president, he sent Al Gore to do Letterman and Carson and then Leno. And Al Gore, when he's scripted, and when he's, he could be quite funny. He was hilarious on Letterman back then.
I remember that.
Obama's not sending anybody anywhere. He's coming out, he's doing speeches, but where is he on Rachel Maddow? Where is he on Ed Schultz? Where is he on NPR? He should be interviewed by Terry Gross on Fresh Air every 2 months.
I agree. They have a horrible PR department in this White House. And what kills me is, like I've said 1,000 times on the page, he's got the blueprint in front of him. He's already seen how it's done. It's kind of like you're, say you're, what do you call those guys trying to clear the high bar? The high bar jumpers, what do you call that?
Oh, the pole vaulters.
Yeah, yeah. If the guy in front of you makes a successful jump, you think, well, I'll just do what he does. You run real fast, you put the pole in the hole, and you lift your feet, and, you know, if the guy before you did it, it's a whole lot easier for you to do it than, you know, Obama acts like he's the first person ever been in the White House, and we got to give him 2, 3, 4 years to stumble around and figure his way. Well, no, if nothing else, do it like Clinton did it and change what you want to change. But he seems unable to grasp that.
And another problem he has, and I understand this problem because I used to have it, pretty much any place Obama goes, he's the smartest guy in the room. I've read his book, I've listened to him talk, all this stuff. He's the smartest guy in the room. But he doesn't understand how to make it simple, how to talk to people who don't have, you know, they never taught the Constitution in law school. They don't have law degrees. They don't have all this stuff. You need to talk to people who have jobs. And, you know, they go to work and they get home and they take care of the kids and then they pay the bills. And then maybe if they got an hour or so, they're going to watch some CSI or The Mentalist or Survivor. Just, and then they go to bed and then they wake up and, you know, that's their life. And then on the weekend, it's, oh, thank God, I get some time to myself. He talks to people as if they're all deeply into the intricacies of how Washington works. And I'm a nerd. I'm a geek. I'm a dweeb. I'm a Poindexter. I follow this stuff, but I get lost. And if I get lost, and Bart, you follow this stuff too. You get lost. You got to have somebody who walks you through it.
You know, I've always said that Obama could use a guy like me because I'm at least half stupid. You know, it's, you know, I understand when Obama talks. I understand what he's saying. But I know that the people stupider than me don't. And it's like if he could explain it to me, it's kind of like when you get you buy a new electrical device, you know, some kind of whatever. And the engineers who design the device are the ones that write the book that explain how it works. And that never works because they say, oh, you start out with the Zycon 353. You go, hello, what's the Zycon? You know? So if Obama would explain shit to me, I could turn around and explain it to the stupider people behind me. But he doesn't get that. He talks. That's why Bush, they say Bush, he wanted to be, you know, he's the guy you could drink a beer with. You can't drink a beer with Obama because he's wanting to, you know, he would go off on one of those Harvard-educated law school diatribes that nobody understands. And, you know, as good as he sounded in 2008, you know what? I don't want to say Hillary was right, that all he has is a good speech, but he's got the good speech and he needs to somehow, you know, speak to the people in Hooterville.
Yeah.
Hooter Oliver Wendell Douglas. He had trouble communicating with the people of Hooterville. And that's kind of what we have here. And, rumor has it Obama's going to win in 2012. That would be my guess. I would bet on that right now.
Same here.
But that the bad news is that might mean we're going to have 8 years of surrender, which I don't know if that's a victory. If he's going to bend over every time Bitch and Boner ask him to, I don't know. That's probably better than having, well, yeah, it's certainly better than having McCain in the White House. But, you know, it seems like I saw a cartoon the other day where two guys stand about 8 feet apart, and the Republican says, I'll meet you halfway. And Obama says, okay, and Obama moves forward like 4 steps, and the Republican moves back 4 steps. So all they've done is take 4 steps to the right, and seems like that's Obama's specialty is you have to give a little bit to get along, and so he moves to the right, and the Republicans move farther to the right.
Yeah, he hasn't, He hasn't learned Clinton's gift. Clinton had a beautiful gift. And I remember hearing old Newt Gingrich talk about it. He said the Republicans didn't like getting in a room with Clinton because they'd sit down and they'd have their list of stuff they'd wanted. And after they left the room, you know, they'd been in there talking to Clinton for a couple hours. They'd walk out and they'd agreed to everything Clinton wanted. And they wouldn't realize it till an hour later and they'd go, damn it.
Well, it makes me sometimes wonder if Obama shouldn't start out with the most outright, you know, like let's give $25,000 to every unemployed person. And they're going to say, no, no, no. And then you say, all right, well, tell you what if we give them $1,500? All of a sudden, now the Republicans have gotten 85, 90% of what they want. But the bottom line is, you know, that's the Bartkop tax plan. Give $1,500 to everyone who ever filed an income tax, you know, who filed taxes last year. And that's going to, you know, that $1 trillion he gave to the super rich, that's going to do nothing. He should have said, if I give you $1 trillion, will you hire, or whatever, I'll give you, whatever, $1,000 for every person you hire for a year.
Yeah.
You know, but to just give them the money and say, now that you have the money, would you consider hiring some people? They'll say, yeah, we'll consider it. And the answer is no, thanks for the trillion. That's how he negotiates.
This is Bart Cop Radio.
My podcast is a comic book related podcast, but we have a lot of shenanigans on it. We tell all kinds of stories. This week, my friend Joe's up in Barrow, Alaska, the northernmost part of the country.
It's cold up there.
Oh, it's not just cold up there. It's dark.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Now, what it is, I don't know. Did you ever see the movie 30 Days of Night?
Robin Williams?
No. It was a vampire movie.
Oh, I did not see it.
It was set in Barrow, Alaska, because in Barrow, Alaska, when the sun goes down, you know, middle of winter, it stays down for 30 days. So the vampires decided, you know what? We're going to get 30 days where we get to run things. Cool. And they, you know, just slowly take out everybody in the city. Now, the thing is, my roommate, I have a roommate here who's kind of my foster daughter, told her that my friend Joe was going to be up in Barrow, Alaska. And she said, I've heard of that. Yeah, that's where the movie 30 Days a Night was set. She said, oh, was that based on a true story? And I said, well, no, because there's no such thing as vampires. And my friend Joe said, well, it was based on a true story. The problem is with the global warming, the polar bears have all come into town and eaten all the vampires, so we don't have to worry about them anymore. But on my podcast, which you can listen to at crazycomics.solitairerose.com, hopefully Bart will throw a link up for me.
Is that comic spelled the right way?
It's comic spelled with an X, and crazy is spelled K-R-A-Y-Z. I will send you a link. But about every week, we talk about comics. We talk about what's going on in our lives. We got a lot of funny stories. We've worked in comic books in one way or another for about 25 years. So we got stories forever.
Wow.
Now on this, I've just got a list here. And one of the things I had that from back about a month ago when we started talking about this was, Obama had this statement on telling those of us on the left who are a little disappointed in the fact that he goes into a negotiation with a series of surrenders rather than a series of demands. That if we want him to be 100% ideologically pure, we're not going to like him and we're going to be disappointed in him, and that's not how it works and everything. Now, Bart, you worked in cars. When you come in to buy a car, you're not going to come in and look at the sticker price and start your negotiation at the sticker price.
Exactly.
You come in to buy a car. Let's say the car, you know, I do a little research online and the car normally goes for $15,000. When I come in, I'm going to go and I'm going to look, see if I can find any flaws in the car, and I'm going to start talking at $10,000. And the car salesman's going to say that I'm crazy, and he's going to start at $20,000. And then we're going to talk and go toward the middle. Now, if I come in and, you know, well, I'd like to pay $15,000 for this car, I'm not walking out of there at less than $17,500. So when Obama comes into these negotiations and says, well, you know, I'm going to give you the tax cuts for the rich, but I'd really like to have A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Well, they've got what they want. They're going to go, no, we're fine. We're good.
What you just described is very bad, but you know what I extra hate? You know, like the icing on the cake? is when Obama comes out and explains to us how the perfect is the evil of the good.
Yes.
Like we've never heard that before. Like, we're 9 fucking years old and we don't understand what negotiations are. We don't understand how the world works, and he's going to explain it to us. You know, the Republicans have talked about Obama's arrogance for years, and I never saw it until these last 2 times when he's come out. You know, this started when he sent Gibbs out to scold the professional left who can't get everything they want. Like, we're some, you know, again, some 9-year-old to demand, we want ice cream and we want to go to the ballpark and we want to, and, you know, like we're a bunch of screaming little brats that don't understand that the world doesn't work that way. That pisses me off, and I wish he would stop doing that.
Bush never did that. When Bush came out, it was, you know what? He listened to the base. He gave them the Terry Schiavo thing. He knew that it was BS, but he also knew that if he came back from his vacation and the Congress took care of it, he had his base locked in. Obama's got to give us something to lock us in. He's got to get something in place so that we shut up about it. And I don't care what it is. Healthcare was such a mess that by the time it was done, I'd forgotten about it. All these other things. Rather than, you know, show us how the sausage is made, just bring the sausage to the table and go, oh, by the way, here, I got worker protection. I got a better unemployment system. Healthcare for kids. I got that for you. Just bring it and say, here you go. This is what I've done for you. Rather than scold us, rather than tell us that, you know, we're not going to get what we want, rather than beating us over the head with it. You know what? Clinton gave us red meat every once in a while. He kicked a Republican ass. He gave us a program we wanted. He did something so that when he did the stupid crap for negotiations like school uniforms, we went, well, you know, that's okay because we got this.
I love that school uniform bullshit. That and the rating of the video games. I just loved it because it's such bullshit and it's a distraction and it gets the talking heads on cable screaming. To me, it's just funny. But hey, to slightly change the subject because I'm afraid we're running out of time. Have you heard about this Arizona bullshit that's popped up in the last 24 hours?
I haven't. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, Jan Brewer, the governor of Arizona, has appointed herself the head of the Republican Death Panel Committee, and she's already killed 2 people. This is great.
Now,
I don't care if she has some kind of legitimate beef. The idea that when Sarah Palin came out last year and said Obama's death panels are going to kill people, well, everybody knows somebody's got to be in charge of making a decision. If grandma is 85 and she's got a whole lot of health problems and there's an experimental thing in Switzerland that costs $1 million, and there's a 1 in 10 that it might work, well, I can see someone's going to have to step up and say, we don't have $1 million to bet on the 100-to-1 to save the life of the 85-year-old who's probably going to die when she's 86. I mean, that makes sense. So that, in effect, is a death panel. Someone somewhere is going to have to make a decision about life and death. It's a fact that can't be ignored. It can't be, you know, it just is going to be there. So after Sarah Palin accused Obama of that, which is completely false, now it's come to roost in Arizona, and everybody's talking about it. Out of all 50 states, 49 have found a way to deal with this, but this Jan Brewer said, oh, we can't afford transplants anymore down here. And transplants, I think they said $800,000 over the life of the patient, which granted is a lot of money, but if you got a 25-year-old mother of 3, yeah, maybe $800,000 is a good enough price to pay to let her live the next 60 years. But, you know, because that's not grandma with a lot of problems, it's a 1 in 100. Matter of fact, Jan Brewer went out of her way to say the transplants, really, you know, the life saving is not there. And all the doctors are saying, what are you talking about? If you get a kidney, or the one that died yesterday needed a lung transplant. And she said no, because they're trying to save money. Isn't it funny? They got $1 trillion to give the super rich that don't need it. But the lady who needs a lung transplant, we can't afford that. Which is just pure craziness, and this Jan Brewer is in a lot of trouble. Democrats in Arizona are pounding her. They're hitting her real hard. I don't know about Fox, but CNN's all over this. They got these people on the air saying, hey, there's 99 people on the transplant list in Arizona, and the first 2 have died, which means, I mean, I hate this, but politically it's a gold mine. That means in a week another one's going to die, and in 2 weeks a fourth one's going to die. So by March 1st, there might be 8 or 10 dead people in Arizona because Jan Brewer's death panel has no compassion. And this is just killing him down there. And, you know, the bottom line, it gets down to the Democrats are right and the Republicans are wrong. And I just fucking hate losing debates again and again and again, you know, with someone that says the earth is flat. And I know the earth is round and I got satellite pictures and I got every other thing in the world to prove my point. But I'm losing the debate to the clown that says the earth is flat. And that's what's so frustrating about these idiot Democrats. They can't win the simplest, easiest debates where all the facts are on their side. And this Arizona thing, you know, we got lucky. You ever notice how the only time that Democrats make a gain is when the Republicans stumble?
Yeah.
You know, not to pick on Obama, but McCain would probably be president if the economy crashed in December instead of October. I remember McCain being ahead, and, you know, when McCain said, oh, I'm suspending my campaign and this and that, you know, and then Obama came out and said, president's got to be able to do two things at once. That was the moment, I think, that Obama won the election. But I think he would have lost it had the economy not crashed. The 2000 debacle was one thing, but then in 2004, Kerry was so bad that the country decided to give Bush four more years. And then in 2008, in my opinion, Obama was so bad, McCain was going to win that had it not been for the crash. But it seems like it's just so frustrating that we're right, but the only time we can win, it's like we've got the better football team. But the only time we can win is when the other guy fumbles on the 1 yard line. And it's just crazy that it works out that way. But, the Republicans and Sarah Palin and the whole death panel bullshit has taken a big pounding this weekend. And, I'm sorry for the people who are dying. I can't do anything to change that in Arizona, but it is kind of nice to see Sarah Palin getting her nose rubbed in it because she lied. And now that that lie got a lot of publicity, now the lie's turned back on them and they're in trouble.
All right, Nate. Hey, friend, sock a soul to me, buddy. Wow! All right. So pow, pow, power. Sock it to me, baby.
Hey, I got a question for you. You know who Frank Luntz is, right?
Yes.
He's a Republican pollster who knows how to, I don't know if twist words is the right way
yep,
to use it.
Yep, that's his job.
That phrase you just used, what's it called, end-of-life counseling? Is that what you call it?
Yes.
Okay, now, to me, that sounds bad. I can understand why that scares people. When I hear end-of-life counseling, I think of going to the doctor with grandma and having the doctor explain to grandma that her illness is costing the family a lot of money and the kids might not go to college if we continue this treatment, this expensive treatment for grandma, and she's bankrupting her son and her grandsons and all this. To me, that's what end of counseling sounds like. I'm just saying it'd be nice if we could put a different label on that. They pointed out recently a memo escaped from Fox News, like 6 months or a year ago, whatever, when they started talking about the public option. People liked that. They thought, well, yeah, I'm the public. I would like that option. So the Fox News sent out a memo that no longer, don't call it the public option, call it the big government option or something. They just changed the name of it. And then people thought the big government option. No, I don't want any of that. Just because they changed the name, people that liked the public option, they started calling it the government option or whatever it was. Now they disliked it. Remember when Obama was running, something like 70% of the people said, yes, we need healthcare reform. But as soon as they started screaming Nazi socialism death panels, then it went under 50%. And that's something the Democrats screw up time and again. Frank Luntz, the Democrats need to hire a Frank Luntz. They need to hire someone. Hell, I could do it. Any moron could do it. It's just, as an IQ of 64, I'm one of the smartest people in the entire Democratic Party. But if the Democrats would hire somebody to give them that advice about what words to use, that would change everything. And it kills me. And to further extrapolate, big word for me, why don't we have a Fox News? The idea that Fox News can hammer 24/7, and they hammer. You know, CNN, people say CNN is our Fox News, which is bullshit, because CNN, they're liberal. They want to be fair and give the Nazis, they want the flat earth people to have their say too. You know,
right.
Debate. This guy says the earth is round. This guy says the world's flat. It's up to you to decide. Well, no, it's the science already decided that. Fucking Galileo or whoever was 1,000 years ago. The earth's been round for 1,000 years. Columbus, you know, whoever discovered it, it's been everybody. Same for the Grand Canyon. The sons of bitches tell you the Grand Canyon's 140 years old. Well, no, it's not. And let's quit saying it is. But the Democrats can't figure it out. And why the hell can't the Democrats or somebody, why can't Clooney and Barbara Streisand and Bill Clinton and 25 millionaires get together and form a news network and just get out there and level the field, but they can't figure that out. Fucking Al Gore puts, I always bring this up. Remember what, after he lost, he said he was going to form a news network or something?
And yeah.
Said, oh, it's going to be Democrat, right? And he said, oh no, we're going down the middle. It was either that or it was going to be a network about the issues, but we're not going to get, we're not going to slant it. See, again, there's the Democrats. We want to be fair. We don't want to propagandize anything. You know, we got Fox News out there 24/7 pounding, 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 pounding. Meanwhile, CNN, who is our only, well, we got MSGOP too, but they're seen as so partisan that they're somehow dismissed by people. I don't understand why we don't have more of a 50-50 there. But the bottom line, the Democrats don't want it bad enough. The Republicans, they want to win at any cost, no matter what it takes, no matter how much money we got to put into it, no matter whose feathers we got to ruffle, we're going to push this through. And if we have to cut some corners, maybe break some lawns, maybe jam some phone lines, maybe, you know, give the broken voting machines to the black part of town, you know, that's how they win elections. They don't win them on the ideas, and the Democrats take it time and again, one after another. I know I'm rambling here, but, you know, another pet peeve of mine, and they do it every time. Some people might think I'm a genius because I call what's going to happen, then it happens. Well, it's not, you don't have to be a genius to see something happen for the 15th time in a row. But the Democrats, a week before the election, then they start saying, hey, we have enough voting machines? You know, they wait till then to even consider thinking about it, where the Republicans, trust me, right now they're working on 2012, 2014, 2016. They've got a plan. The Democrats are all, victory knocks on my door. I might answer it, but I damn sure ain't going to work for it. And that pisses me off.
Well, you can even look at how, you know, you talked about how Fox has this, and I always bring in AM radio, because AM radio, oh, those guys, they're on message. They're all on message. They're all using the same terms. They're all hitting the same points. They all have the same links. They're doing this. One of the reasons why right-wing media is able to kick our ass backward, forward, upside down, and you and I have talked about it on the phone, and I've heard other people talk about it, but I want to talk about it here on Bart Cop Radio so the listeners know, and they can start helping with this too. When you listen to Rush Limbaugh, he's always the sales guy. You know what? We're winning. We're marching on to victory. We're going to take the White House. We're going to take Congress. We're the ones who are right. We're the ones getting this done. Even after an election. Even after an election when they got their asses handed to them in 2006. You know, Rush Limbaugh was, well, this is a temporary setback. The Democrats ripped us off. They cheated. They lied. They did this. They stole it from us, but we're going to win. And that's what gets listeners.
I've always thought one of the most entertaining hours you could ever find on radio, let Rush spew that venom for 3 hours, and then let me have the next hour. I think every Republican that loves Rush would love to hear what I had to say. It's like, oh, yeah, Bart Cop, let's see a refute that. Oh, I would love to be in that position. I could sit there and just listen to Pig Boy for 3 hours, and it would be hard to fit everything in that following hour. But it's funny that, you know, it's confusing me because I know these radio stations, they're in it for the money. They don't really care, you know, about, I mean, now and then they might care about a tax issue or something, but basically they just want to make some money. I think that hour after Rush would be, you know, at least 80% as popular as Rush, because aren't you going to want to hear what the other guy had to say? It, when Rush says, this is irrefutable, and I'll give you 10 reasons why, and then I sit there and list the 10 reasons why not, you lying bastard. And more people are going to agree with me than agree with Rush, unless you're just crazy blind partisan.
No program directors telling Bart what to say, and no big money producers to push their agenda on you. Bart Cop Radio.
I don't know if you saw Jon Stewart Monday night. That would be Monday the 10th, probably. He was reacting to the horror in Tucson, Arizona, but he acted all funny about it. I don't understand. I mean, yes, it was a horrible thing, and we were all shocked by it, but he acted as though it was another 9/11. He opened the show saying, it's not going to be a good show. We don't feel like doing a show tonight. It's a comedy show, and the news isn't funny. And then he kind of went on to this 9/11 kind of rambling. If you saw the first show after 9/11 where he cried, and, you know, that's cool. It was a very emotional day, and he talked about he used to see the World Trade Center out his window, but now he saw the Statue of Liberty, and that was cool, which he was just trying to make the best of a bad situation. But he came out Monday night with that same attitude, and I was confused. Like I say, it was bad, but was it bad enough to shake a hardened veteran like John Stewart? I mean, does the day go by in this country where there isn't some horrible news? And I know that it was shocking, especially to the families, but, you know, when a major airliner goes down, there's 300 families affected. This was like 20. And yes, there was a political overtone to it, but anyway, it just shook John to his core, and he took what I thought was an irrational stance. It was the same stance that he had at the Sanity rally that Bill Maher called him out on, and I agree with Bill Maher. And before we get started, you know I like John Stewart. He's a god among comedians. He's an A+, 10 on the scale, but people make mistakes. People err from time to time, and I think he made some mistakes here. Let's get into it.
Thanks for joining us. I would love to say that that we've got a great show for you tonight. Not sure that's the case. We are going to have Dennis Leary in the studio. Good.
Now, see, at this point, the crowd has no idea what they're in for. They think it's a normal show. In my opinion, the crowd is not expecting John to be in this fragile, destroyed state. I don't think anybody would expect that. Why would they? Think since 9/11 how many horrible things have happened in this country, and John picks today to be shattered.
Because quite frankly, after watching the news all weekend, all I want to do is visit with an old friend and perhaps trade insults about one another's acting ability. You know, it's hard to know what to say. Obviously, the events this weekend in Arizona weigh heavily. Sadly, it is a feeling that this country has experienced all too often. And unfortunately for our show, the closer that we have gotten towards discussing and dealing with current events, the harder it becomes in situations where reality is truly sad. I can give you a typical compilation of the day's news excesses, but it doesn't really seem appropriate. And clearly none of our correspondents feels much like standing around reporting, pretending to be in Washington. At least I don't think they do.
At this point, he did some odd skit with John Oliver about wearing children's pajamas. It was odd because it wasn't very funny, and he already explained to us that his staff didn't feel like being funny. Maybe John Oliver said, hey, I got a little funny bit. Maybe it'll bring us some levity. I don't know. But anyway, it wasn't very funny, and it's not germane to the point, so we'll skip that.
So here we are again, stunned by a tragedy. We have been visited by this demon before. How do you make sense of these types of senseless situations is really the question that seems to be on everybody's mind. And I don't know that there is a way to make sense of this sort of thing. As I watch the political pundit world, many are reflecting and grieving and trying to figure things out. But it's definitely true that others are working feverishly to find the tidbit or two that will exonerate their side from blame or implicate the other.
Okay, and here's my problem. Right there, he's beginning this, both sides are in on it. Both sides are scrambling to explain. Both sides are looking to blame the other side. John, it's not the same. I realize I'm an idiot tequila boy from Oklahoma, and you're one of the biggest people in show business, but I shouldn't have to explain this to you. The two sides are not the same. Jesus Christ, if the two sides were the same, does that mean you just flipped a coin one day and decided that you were going to be on the liberal side or the Republican side? I don't understand, John. How in the world could you take that position that both sides are equally maneuvering, trying to make something out of this? That just seems crazy to me.
And watching that is as predictable, I think, as it is dispiriting. Did the toxic political environment cause this? A graphic image here, an ill-timed comment, violent rhetoric, those types of things. I have no idea. You know, we live in a complex ecosystem of influences and motivations, and I wouldn't blame our political rhetoric any more than I would blame heavy metal music for Columbine. And by the way, that is coming from somebody who truly hates our political environment. It is toxic. It is unproductive. But to say that that is what has caused this, or that the people in that are responsible for this, I just don't think you can do it. Boy, would that be nice.
John, where is your head? I mean, apparently you're in shock. Maybe you shouldn't be held responsible for what you're saying, because obviously you were deeply disturbed by this. But really, you would compare a kid with a heavy metal record in his room, listening to it over and over, with the 24/7 bombardment? Are you kidding me? The idea that Fox, with their three channels, and Rush Limbaugh, and the hundreds of Rush Limbaugh wannabes around the nation, the idea that they're 24/7 screaming that Muslim in the White House is out to destroy our country, he's taking away everything that America holds dear, he's ruining the country that our fathers fought for and died for in World War II, Obama is destroying America, really? You equate that with a fucking album by Judas Priest or somebody? Are you kidding me, John? Where is your head? What's wrong with you? I'm trying not to... Oh, and I intend to use this as an example of how you can very, very strongly disagree with somebody without calling him an idiot cocksucker, which obviously John is not. He's a comedian, a professional, who I think just has the wrong take on this, and that's fine. Everybody's got his... There's no way to say I'm right and he's wrong, but how do you compare a kid listening to a record with the constant... How many years now? Two and a half years, we've been hearing Obama's out to destroy America. I mean, the simple-minded people in this country, they think, hey, you know, my granddaddy fought and died for this farm, and I'll be goddamn if I'm going to let that nigger in the White House steal it from me. We're talking about stupid, simple people here, that they listen to Rush, they listen to Hannity and that bullshit, and the constant bullshit that comes out of Fox News, and they believe that stuff. And they think, well, here's this nigger from Kenya coming over here to screw our country. We got to stop him. It's not the same as listening to a record, John. You're surprising me here.
Boy, would it be nice to be able to draw a straight line of causation from this horror to something tangible, because then we could convince ourselves that if we just stop this, the horrors will end.
First of all, John, nobody said that. Nobody said that if Limbaugh and Fox News and the rest of them, Sarah Palin, if they were to become civil, decent human beings, that all mental illness would stop. Nobody said that. But apparently you're saying the opposite, that no amount of hate and vitriol pounded into your brains again and again, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, could possibly have any effect on the people who are a little iffy in the brain department. How in the world can you take that position, John? I know you especially, lots of people, most people maybe, hate any kind of Hitler comparison. John specifically and extra hates that, and I understand that. But are you trying to tell me that Hitler and his people pounding every day on the radio in Germany in the 30s, the Jews are at fault, the Jews are destroying our country, the Jews are the ones that are killing the German dream, assuming they had a compliment to the American dream. It's the Jews that are at fault. The Jews, the moneylenders, the landlords, the people that got their boot on your throat, the people that are strangling the Germans. We got to stop the Jews from strangling the Germans. The Jews are the problem. The Jews are the problem. We got to stop the Jews. The Jews are inhuman. They must be stopped. Now you go through weeks and months and years of that. What else could explain? I'm not trying to get on to my German friends here, my German readers, my German listeners, but we must admit Germany went batshit crazy in the 30s and 40s. And I don't know that I've ever seen a rational explanation for it, but I'm going to raise the possibility that it was the constant pounding and pounding. The Jews did it. The Jews are stealing from you. The Jews are the fault. Everything's, you know, it all goes down to the Jews. They're not human. We got to get rid of them. If we get rid of the Jews, we're going to get rid of the problem. So let's stick them in the ovens. Let's shoot them in the head. Let's round them up and make our country great again, because our country can't be great with the Jews here. Now, isn't that what we've got in this same situation? The Democrats did it. The Democrats are destroying our country. The Democrats are ruining America. The Democrats are stealing everything you've ever fought for. Hell, they blame the recession on Obama at this point. To constantly bam, 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 beat that into your head. The Democrats, the liberals, they're out to destroy America. The nigger in the White House, that Kenyan, he's not even American. He's a spy. I swear you've heard this. I've heard this. I'm sure you have too. He's Al-Qaeda plant put in there to give our country to Osama bin Laden. Hell, his middle name's Hussein. What other fucking proof do you want? This is what they pound in your head every day. And John Stewart is here to tell us that that has no effect. Now, he didn't use those words, but he says, how are you going to draw a line from A to B? Well, how are you going to not draw the line from A to B?
You know, to have the feeling, however fleeting, that this type of event can be prevented forever.
This may be the first time I've ever seen John Stewart make a completely false argument. Who said that stopping the hate will stop these kind of crimes forever? John, nobody said that. Why are you claiming that someone did? Nobody said that. You're beating down a straw man that doesn't exist.
You know, to have the feeling, however fleeting, that this type of event can be prevented forever. It's hard not to feel like it can't. You know, you cannot outsmart crazy. You don't know what a troubled mind will get caught on.
Exactly. Nobody can predict. Exactly. Nobody can predict what the troubled mind will get caught on. But to have these thousands or tens of thousands of baited hooks out there waiting to catch him on something. John, how do you not see that? This kid, say a year ago, he was just 10% crazy. And he's driving down the road, and he's hearing Limbaugh pound on that nigger canyon in the White. Now, granted, Rush doesn't use that word, but Rush's audience clearly understands when he says Obama and those kinds of people, Obama and his ilk. You know, trust me, his audience understands. But this kid a year ago driving down the street, hearing all this hate on the radio, pounding and pounding and pounding about how we're losing our country to this canyon in the White House. John, you're saying that has no effect or could not have had an effect on this kid? John, I can only assume you're in shock and you're not thinking clearly. And I'm not making the point that Limbaugh equals murder. I'm saying if he got an unstable mind and he's exposed to this constant pounding of hatred every time he turns on the TV, you know these people, their TV, it stays on Fox News. They don't move around like normal people. They wake up to Fox News, they go to sleep with Fox News. When they're in the car, they're listening to the Nazi AM station in their area. They're, you know, the average bonehead is getting what maybe 6, 8, 10 hours a day of this pounding hatred. And the more normal, non-insane Republicans, if there's such a thing, they're just sitting there seething. Oh, that dirty son of a bitch in the White House. I got to keep my guard up so he don't steal my family. He won't steal my dream. He's not going to rape my daughter, that black man in the White, that canyon in the White House. He's not getting my daughter. But for the crazy people, they go ahead and jump off. They think, hey, I ain't going to let happen to me. I'm going to the store. I'm getting me a Glock. I'm going to get me one of them extended clips with the 31 bullets. I'll show these some bitches who's boss. But John doesn't see it. And to me, that's amazing.
Crazy always seems to find a way. It always has. Which is not to suggest that resistance is futile. It sounded pretty dark, what I just said there. Now that I reconsidered it in my own head. Crazy people rule us all. I don't think that's true, but... And I do think it's important for us to watch our rhetoric. I do think it's a worthwhile goal not to conflate our political opponents with enemies, if for no other reason than to draw a better distinction between the manifestos of paranoid madmen and what passes for acceptable political and pundit speak.
I started to say that sentence, but that group of words was so long, I have no idea what he meant. I played it back a couple of times. It still didn't make any sense to me, so we'll just move on.
You know, it would be really nice if the ramblings of crazy people didn't in any way resemble how we actually talk to each other on TV. Let's at least make troubled individuals easier to spot.
Again, I have no idea what he's trying to say, but he's doing this live. Without notes, still in shock and numb. Maybe he's just trying to get to the next commercial.
It is to see good people like this hurt. It is so grievous, and it causes me such sadness. But again, I refuse to give in to that feeling of despair. There is light in this situation. I urge everyone, read up about those who were hurt and or killed in this shooting. You will be comforted by just how much anonymous goodness there really is in the world. You read about these people and you realize that all the people that you don't even know, that you have never met, are leading lives of real dignity and goodness, and you hear about crazy, but it's rarer than you think.
I wonder what John thought when he heard this replayed, because, yeah, to some degree he's making sense, but, you know, read up on the good people that were shot because they lived lives of dignity. Well, what's that got to do with the point, John? Your point, as I understand it, is we can't draw a line between Limbaugh and Palin and the madness, and I'm saying we can, and I hate to see somebody of your weight throwing your power and your weight behind a position that doesn't make any sense. For you to let Palin and Limbaugh off the hook at this point, and this is not even political. This is just the common sense of something's causing people to go crazy. Something caused Germany to go crazy. And I'm not talking about this idiot in Arizona specifically, but when you constantly, they're not even saying Obama's a bad president. They're saying he's out to destroy the country. Now that's going to get some people riled up. Why would you want to let them off the hook for that, John? I don't understand.
And I think you'll find yourself even more impressed with Congresswoman Giffords and amazed at how much living some of the deceased packed into lives that were cut way too short. And if there is real solace in this, I think it's that for all the hyperbole and the vitriol that's become a part of our political process, when the reality of that rhetoric, when actions match the disturbing nature of words, we haven't lost our capacity to be horrified. Please, God, let us hope we never do. Let us hope we never become numb to what real horror, what the real blood of patriots looks like when it's spilled. Maybe it helps us to remember to match our rhetoric with reality more often.
If you're able to follow what he's saying, then you're smarter than I am, which is probably the case. Basically, he's saying that Giffords was a very nice lady, which apparently that's true, but is it germane? What if she was kind of a normal person as opposed to super nice? Alan Grayson said she was, of the 435 people in Congress, she would be like the second or first nicest person, the least partisan, the least vitriolic, the least hate-filled, whatever. And so let's say that's true. But John's saying, don't shoot the extra nice people. That doesn't make a lot of sense. I can tell John's hurt by this, but is this a situation where some of his staff should have said, John, maybe this isn't the best idea. Maybe we should just do a rerun tonight because you're not really making sense. I'm not saying he's insane. It's just what he's saying doesn't make a lot of sense. It's half, in my opinion, half wrong that we can't draw a line between Limbaugh, Palin, and the bad people. And just the other half's just rambling. It's his show. He can do what he wants. But I'm thinking maybe a rerun might have been a better choice than what we got on Monday night.
Because the reality of dangerous rhetoric is I think even those that speak hyperbolically, I think all of them tonight would absolutely recoil and say, wow, you know, that's, you know, that is not the picture of what we were discussing and what we were talking about. And I have to remember that there's a reality to that situation.
Actually, John, the opposite is true. And I think you know that somewhere in your head, but that part is not escaping. You don't see Limbaugh and Palin and Fox News saying, hey, maybe we got a little carried away. Maybe all this Obama's out to destroy America. Maybe that rhetoric is not the best thing for the country. Maybe we should pull back a little bit. I haven't heard that at all. I heard Palin and Rush saying, hey, bullshit, mother effer. You can't blame this on us. We're 100% innocent. What are you, crazy? Just like you crazy liberals to pin this on us when we're 100% totally innocent. That's what I'm hearing. I don't know what John's hearing. John's looking for the better angels than Palin and Limbaugh. And I think that, well, that doesn't make John Stewart crazy, but that's a crazy idea. Limbaugh and Palin are out for the bucks. Every time they scream nigger in the White House, they get $1 million. So what makes you think they're not going to scream nigger in the White House 1,000 times?
That we can't approach verbally. Because someone or something will shatter our world again. And wouldn't it be a shame if we didn't take this opportunity and the loss of these incredible people and the pain that their loved ones are going through right now, wouldn't it be a shame if we didn't take that moment to make sure that the world that we are creating now, that will ultimately be shattered again by a moment of lunacy, wouldn't it be a shame if that world wasn't better than the one we'd previously lost?
Once again, I have absolutely no idea in this world what the hell he's talking about. It sounds to me, my best guess is that he's saying, wouldn't it be better if we all just joined hands and sang Kumbaya and recognize that we're all the same and, you know, that same speech that Obama gives. You know, yes, it's true that what we have in common is so much greater than what we disagree on, but, you know, we're talking about the snarling rabid dog here that's biting at your hand that Jon Stewart and Obama are trying to reason with. It's not going to work, and I don't mean to be some fatalist that it's all over, nothing can stop it, but we have to recognize a threat when we see it, and I see it, and I'm no longer surprised that Obama can't see it. He's shown us for 2.5 years that he can't see it. I mean, he could have a dog biting each leg and each hand, and he's going to say, what dog? But John, I think, sees it in times where he's not hurt and confused after a tragedy like we just went through.
So how will we process this tonight? Absolutely no idea. We'll come back. I'll show a field piece about something incredibly stupid and silly. Dennis Leary will come out here. He and I will most likely insult each other playfully. And then tomorrow, you know, we go back to trying to do what we normally do, which is highlight absurdity in a comical way that is a catharsis for people and not a sadness. So thank you for listening. I know this is probably more helpful for me than it is for you, but we'll be right back.
That last statement I started to say was the most true, but I don't think he's lying 1%. I think his heart is just spilling out in the microphone, but I'm thinking that he had to go through that rambling thing before so he could come back Tuesday night and be the old Jon Stewart. What was strange that when they came back, they went to a 2-year-old piece of, I forget his name. One of his went somewhere to talk to an old man about having sex in the year 70s and 80s. And it was, you know, the idea that they had to go back 2 years to find something struck me as kind of strange. You'd think they'd go back whatever 30 days and find something that was semi-relevant, semi-recent. To me, that's part of the total bail. It's like he didn't want to do the show, but he felt like he had to. So he does this cathartic monologue, which didn't make a lot of sense. Then they go to some 2-year-old piece that really didn't make a lot of sense. It was kind of funny. And then Dennis Leary here. Think of poor Dennis Leary backstage. Oh, great. Now I got to go out there and save the day. I got to go out there and be funny. And he was. He came out with his book, and they talk about what a dumb book it was. And he said, well, it's better than your dumb book. And they went light laugh for a while. But it would be curious if Leary was scheduled to be there that night or if John called. You know, John really, to be honest, has some really awful guests. He always has some author of some book you've never heard of, and they talk about the book that really I don't care about. But I wonder if he had one of those authors tonight, and he called the guy and said, hey, let's do it another time. I'm thinking he called Dennis Leary and said, hey, old buddy, I need some bullshit levity tonight. Can you come over and do the show? And he probably said, yeah, and that's how we ended up with that. And I purposely didn't see the Tuesday show because I wanted to do this little bit on the Monday show. Maybe he came out Tuesday and said, sorry about last night. I have no idea. It's a little disheartening to me to see one of our leaders, because as you know, John is more of a leader in the Democratic Party, arguably, than the president. It was Jon Stewart that got that 9/11 responders bill pushed through, him and Gildebrand, whatever her name is. But Jon Stewart is the one that put it up in the air and said, hey, everybody, look what the sons of bitches are doing, and that shamed him out of it. So I hate to see one of our top Democratic leaders get all confused about let's not blame Limbaugh and Palin for the problems that we have in America. Yes, they are at fault. John, you're wrong. That's okay. You got an opinion. I got an opinion. Everyone listening to this has their opinion. Your show, you can do what you want. I just very, very much disagree.
take on this tragedy in Arizona, this gunman shooting? I mean, you always have an interesting perspective on these things.
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, we're going to have to hear from the NRA a lot about how this shouldn't stop anything that they want to do. First of all, the NRA should just change their name to the Assassins Lobby, because that's what they are. Yeah, you can applaud that. Somebody should applaud that. I'm so tired of hearing about the Second Amendment and the Constitution. If you love guns, just admit it like it's a vice. It's like alcohol or drugs or sex addiction or gambling. It's just a vice. It's something you like. It's not good for you or anybody else. You just like it. But stop the bull about the Second Amendment and the Constitution, because nobody needs a gun that fires 31 rounds.
Yeah,
that's what this guy had.
Although, well, the interesting thing,
Sarah Palin needed 5 to shoot that moose that was basically on the end of the couch.
Right. I mean, that was illegal. That big magazine was illegal. Then it became legal again. I don't know why it became legal again. Because if this guy had a, you know, the magazine, it fits in the bottom of the gun. But normally it's no bigger than the butt of the gun. And this one makes it extra long so you can get a number. He would not have been able to kill if the original law had been in place, he wouldn't have been able to fire shots.
Okay, but there's a much bigger issue, which is the psychology of this country, which loves guns. It's just a very armed country with a lot of crazy people, which is not a great combination. And somebody also should tell all these people, these NRA types, who think it's great to be armed everywhere. Arizona has one of the loosest gun rules in the country. You can, I think, carry any weapon concealed without a permit. They want every drunk in a bar to be armed in case a fight breaks out. And these guys always think that, you know, it's great to have a gun because if some bad stuff goes down, I'll be able to stop the bad guy. Mm-hmm. This is your fantasy, asshole. You would never be able to do that. People have to be trained for months and months at a time. They have to really know what's going on to be able to stop something like that. If that really happened, they would probably freeze up and shoot the wrong person.
So
let's stop that fantasy also. And also, I think, how about the Democrats reclaiming this issue? This is the problem. I understand that the gun lobby owns the Supreme Court, and they own the Republican Party. What's disappointing is that they have cowed the Democratic Party into silence. There should be one party that sticks up for this issue. Yeah. Not expecting it from this crowd, but some audience somewhere should stick up for this issue.
Now, Roger Ailes said the Fox are going to scale back the rhetoric. Do you think this will last for any longer than a week or two?
No, because that's the rhetoric they love. Mm-hmm. The right wing loves the go-to rhetoric for them is, wouldn't it be fun to kill the people we disagree with? You know, they try to put across this false equivalence. No? Really? Then do you read? Have you seen what people have said? Have you seen what Sarah Palin says? You know, she talks about don't retreat, reload. She says it like a pull toy that's broken. Every five minutes she says this.
Yeah.
Michelle Bachmann said she wants Minnesotans armed and dangerous. Alan West, a new congressman, said he wants his opponent to be afraid to leave the House. Left-wingers don't talk that way. And also, left-wingers, even if they do sometimes make a gun analogy or something, their audience isn't hysterical. They're already talking, the right-wingers, to people who are hysterical and are irrational and are highly armed to begin with. Newt Gingrich, and by the way, among the right-wing douchebags I hate him the mostest. because... He says things. He said the Obama administration is as much a threat to us as were the Nazis and the Soviet Union.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Now, it's not just ridiculous, but when you characterize the opposition, the political opposition, is not just the opposition, but the enemy. The Soviet Union and the Nazis were our enemies. Of course, you're going to have borderline people who go and take this over the line. So stop telling me that the left and the right are both crazy. Yes, there are crazies on the left.
Yeah.
But they're not the same. They're not gun crazy. They're not violent crazy. Who goes to gun shows? Who was for the war in Iraq? Who's part of militias?
Yeah.
You know, when you hear the phrase armed compound in a secluded rural area, What is that, a bunch of Democrats? Is that Dennis Kucinich out there?
I don't think so.
Sorry you asked?
No, I'm not sorry I asked. No, I'm not sorry, because I
But
I like...
the Democrats need to reclaim patriotism. Yeah. That is what they should do.
Yeah.
You know what? Paying taxes, patriotic. Wanting health care for every American, that's patriotic. Supporting our troops by getting them out of these pointless stalemates overseas, that's patriotic. And stopping people from carrying assault rifles in public, patriotic.
Well, you premiere on the 14th. Is that this Friday?
Well, there you have it. Bart Cop Radio, show number 164 is in the can. It feels good to have that behind us. I feel like I'm back in the radio business again, back in the saddle. I know it's been a long time since we did a radio show, but we are going to do more radio shows. I got a partner. That's really going to help. I think we can safely say that wasn't the best show we ever did, but they will get better. Practice makes perfect. And while we're never going to get to perfect, more practice going to mean more shows. That's good news for everybody. I'd like to thank the people who stuck with me through the thin times. We got more Bart Cop Radio coming. So this is Bart and Frozen K-Drag. I'm out of here. Going to leave you with some garbage. See you next show.